everybody. Welcome to Smart Women Publish podcast. I'm your host, Bev Ryan. I'm the author of the book Smart Women Publish, and I provide book coaching and publishing services for women who want to write and publish nonfiction books that have an impact in their world and in the world of their readers. So today I'm really excited to be speaking with Louise Karch, who is the name whisperer and author of Word Glue. So welcome, Louise.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here, and hi to all the gals listening to this wherever they are in the world.
So first of all, I'm really intrigued by the name whisperer. So I'd love to hear the story behind that.
I come from a family that loves words, and my mother is an avid reader and thoughtful kind of gal. And when I was little, very, very early on, I used to tell stories. Like as soon, pretty much the minute I could start talking, I was telling stories. And my mother used to write them down. I still wish I had a secretary. She would write them down. And the names of the characters were crazy, like Abu Kaka and Sherry Doodley. I mean, like just like crazy names that the kind of sounds that children would love to hear. So I've been naming things for a long time. I'm Canadian by birth. I'm a recovering Canadian, relocated to Melbourne. And my particular career didn't exist in Australia. So I needed to find a career where I could be a one of one. And what I noticed is, even though I've got a background, well, a varied background, but one of the areas was branding, that there's a lot of branders here. And I couldn't compete in that space. So I realized, I'm going to grab naming and just see how that goes. So that's how I became a name whisperer. And I've been naming things for a decade. I just hadn't really focused on that as a sellable service.
Because, it's such a critical part of what we do in business. But to find somebody who actually specializes in that, I think that's awesome. So can you tell us some of the industries or types of organizations you've worked with?
Well, it'd be easier to tell you the ones I haven't worked with. I haven't yet named a plane. Actually, I almost named a plane for Qantas, but I've named books, churches, I renamed a 102-year-old educational institution. I've renamed a multinational tech firm. I recently named a Canadian career management app for youth. I've named a probiotic drink recently. That's good for your stomach, called, well, I named it Belly Up because it lifts your gut health. And I've worked on almost every sector. So I've worked in the health sector, the manufacturing sector, insurance, media. Like, honestly, Bev, I've kind of had the joy and privilege of working with folks across many fields, architecture, dental. Like, you know, I like working with professionals, and fortunately, there are professionals everywhere.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be really interested how you were able to build your own brand, I suppose, within that space of naming things. Was that a slow process, and how did you go about that?
Well, I didn't really realize that naming was a niche, that people were hiring naming companies for up to $200,000 to name things. Like, what is it? Yeah, anyway, the top dogs are making $200,000 to name things. So I had no idea. And I had been naming things because I have a proclivity for language and a love of language and sound. And what happened is the very first client that I renamed was a podorthist. So Dr. Colin Dombrowski made orthotics and dealt with people who had lower leg extremity issues. I was a former figure skating champion. I limped into his practice because my landing leg, my right leg, had nerve damage. And I was in so much pain. And he asked me, what do you do? I would never talk like this to anybody. I said, I make people like you money. He goes, well, how do you do that? And I said, well, first I'd start with your name. And the name of his company was the TDG Group. Well, that doesn't tell you anything. And here he was, one of Canada's top experts on dealing with lower leg extremity issues. And he was losing market share to competitors who had a better brand, but weaker experience. He was the only one about to finish, and now he has, a PhD in the area. And so I led a name storming session. I took him through a process that I now call the Q12, a series of 12 strategic questions that really get at the essence of a brand. And then because of a Canadian, after my preliminary work and his primary clients were doctors, I asked them about his brand. So I gave him all the data. I brought his friends in. We had a pizza and beer party. I did a tour of his lab and we found his new name. Can you guess what it is?
What is it?
It's Soul Science. So what happened is when I realized that I was onto something was I increased his revenue by, let me just get the stat. That's the sound of my book. I increased his revenue by 130% in 18 months. And that was with a name change. And what happened, I think sometimes niches find us.
Yes.
Is I renamed a number of businesses and I doubled their income. Well, the third or fourth time I did that, I went, okay, this is crazy magic. This is a superpower. Jack Reese and Al Reese and Jack Trout wrote a book called Positioning the Battle for Your Mind. And they believe that naming is one of the most strategic decisions you can make. It's kind of insurance. A good name is insurance for your brand. And so when I saw these results, I just kept learning about naming and looking at the science of sound and why some names are sticky and others aren't. And then I decided to write a book. So that's kind of how I got into the niche. I did something I loved and then I discovered it made such a difference to these really good people doing work that mattered.
Yes. And to find out there is a science behind it.
Yes. Yeah. It is an art and science.
Yes. Yeah, that like you said, superpower, that's that crazy mixture of things, isn't it? When we kind of find our spot, it's like, oh, I'm just kind of good at it, but you know, there's things I have to know, but I'm also just good at it.
Well, what happens that means is you've got a skill. Mm. And that, you know, as you help these professional women figure out how to serve the audience that they care about and make a book a part of that offering. Mm. Is you've taken your skill and you've spent hours at your craft and then it becomes mastery. And that's what happens with any of us that find a passion and then a market niche is if we invest the time to learn and if we are willing to do the hard work, the emotional labor of writing a book that deepens our expertise even more so we can be of even more service.
Definitely. I always sort of counter anybody who says, well, I don't know enough to write a book or I'm not an expert. My argument is, well, if you do the book right, if you research it properly, you'll be an expert on your subject matter anyway by the time you finish the book.
Absolutely. And particularly if you figure out your niche. So I knew my book was for professionals. I was not writing a book for the average audience. This wasn't a book for everybody. I wasn't creating a Timex. I was creating a Rolex. And I knew that. I wanted folks who had probably finished definitely high school and probably a university degree. I was writing for a kind of audience that's a serial entrepreneur. And they've either learned a lot from the school of hard knocks or they have dedicated themselves to mastering a particular occupation. Mm. So you can become an expert in your niche with willingness.
Yes, and time. So when you say you wrote your book, the book that we can all find now is Word Glue. So is that the original book?
No, and I highly recommend Bev, I kind of recommend it and I kind of don't recommend it. I knew that I wanted to be a writer. I have loved books and books have been my friends my whole life. And I knew one day I wanted to be able to create this magical thing called a book. And I had tried a number of attempts and I just was too precious about them. So I decided to write the naming book because I thought, okay, I'll just do that as what's called a nearling. And a nearling is, it might not be your ultimate goal, but you use that as kind of like your practice run. Right. And it turned out to be something that I really loved. But I just thought, okay, I'm going to learn all the things about writing a book with this book. This is my training book. And I'll pause there because you might have some questions around that because you started asking me, is it the first book? So let me pause there in case you want to take any one of those threads.
No, that's fine. We'll keep going. So the naming book, is that the name of your first book?
No, so the name of my first book was Namefluence because the right name gives you influence. Now, that was a clunky name. That's called a portmanteau, just like Microsoft's a portmanteau. Portmanteau is a French word meaning carpet bag. You bring pieces together. Yeah. And look, it did the job. I decided to be a writer, and I knew that because of my penchant for perfectionism, I'm a former figure skating champion, like we know, like my species, we care about the details. That's mm-hmm. a good thing and a bad thing.
Right. But
I knew that if I didn't have a hard date, that I would never hit send and send the book to the publisher. So mm-hmm. I had, locally, I live near a park. Parks are important to me as a kid. I talked to our mayor about how to improve the park, and we ended up getting a $350,000 grant to improve the park. But that process of building a relationship with the mayor meant that Angela Altar, who founded the Williamstown Literary Festival, said, "You're doing a book? Why don't you launch it at the Willie Lit Fest?" Oh my gosh. So all of a sudden I had a hard date. So I, even though I knew the book wasn't perfect, I knew that I had to let it go. Just like a skater knows that their first, and forgive me, it's a Canadian reference, but a skater knows their first skate of the season is not going to be the final routine that they have at the end of the season. I knew that this first edition of this book wouldn't be my final edition, but I also knew I had to get it out in the world and let the world tell me what worked and what didn't work about it. And so that's what I did. That was, you know, now we can all publish in an iterative process. You can do, you know, version one and release it as tightly or as broadly as you want.
Mm. No, it's that's great advice for people who are sort of fearing that whole perfection thing. So first edition, get it out. And you're right, it shapes itself, and it's so easy to replace the files to do the next version.
Absolutely. And I had the honor and privilege of working with a gifted designer, Julia Affleck, who made the book beautiful. And I think about the look of the book. I had Julia Affleck on the internals and Wade Gilpin on the cover. And that combination has created a book that won against Harvard Business Press and Wiley and McGraw-Hill. I mean, the book just, like, I have to pinch myself sometimes because I'm like, yeah, you know, I had a good team and they produced this remarkable product.
So you're talking now about Word Blue.
Yeah. So I had a couple versions between Namefluence Edition 1 and Word Blue. And I did very small print runs, Beth. But I would do a 200 run print run. And I believe really highly in integrity. So I used a local printer. You know, I know Kevin and Kylie. I know, you know, who has kids. I know who has horses. I know where my money is going. Julia, I know personally. Wade, I know personally. So I've created a brand where every step of the way it's high integrity. Everybody's been paid appropriately. The paper is happy paper. You know, we're not using fresh source. It's as local and kind and generous a project as I could make it all the way along.
I know your book is endorsed by some fairly big names. One of them is Seth Godin.
Yes.
So that's pretty awesome. So just to give some context about Word Glue for people who are listening and not heard anything about it or never seen it, when did it come out?
So it came out, the version, the international edition, which is on sale now, came out in July of 2019.
Yeah.
And the international edition, for those of your audience members who are selling internationally, I had to go through the book and take out every word that had a U or an S or a Z. So yes, by that, I mean, in Australia, they spell realization with an S. In North America, they spell it with a Z. In Canada, yes, we spell humor with a U, but the U.S. spells it without a U.
Yes.
So I have different, like the book is now in 11 countries. And so in the international edition, I had to make it, I had to use English that was accepted as standard in a number of different markets. That was a challenge, and I was very glad to have that part done. So yes, international edition, July 2019.
Right. So is it published by a publishing company or are you self-publishing?
Well, and this is why anybody can create their own publishing company. You can create your own publishing company. So
yes,
I created a publishing company called Brandfluence. So the book is published under Brandfluence. And that's how I did it. And Bev, I've been reviewing, when I was in Canada, I was a business book reviewer for the Canadian Book Review Annual. So I had reviewed, maybe up to 100 books. Mm-hmm. So I was very, and I reviewed in the business category. So I had a real sense, an appreciation for what books I felt worked. And that probably influenced me unconsciously as I went to create my own.
Yes. Mm. And that, yes, it's really important that people have a really good overview of what constitutes a quality book. And it's not necessarily big words or lots of crazy, beautiful design elements. It's what's in the book, really, isn't it? The value that the content brings to the reader, but it's also, it has to invite the reader in, of course.
It's a real mix of a book cover tells a story in a second. Mm. And so you want to make sure that your book cover tells a story. My book cover looks like a composition book, so it echoes a composition book,
yes,
which is perfect because you're composing your name. But in terms of your folks going to write their book, and you mentioned Seth Godin. Seth mm-hmm. Godin is started his career as one of his many careers, but he spent quite a bit of time in book packaging. Mm-hmm. And I did his course, the marketing seminar, otherwise known as TMS, and that's where I worked through the book Namefluence to figure out my new book. And it was actually Seth made a comment on one of my lesson responses, and I had mentioned in the comment something about word glue, and he wrote afterwards, "That's the title of your book." Uh-huh. And I went, "Oh my gosh, he's right!"
Of course.
What happens is when and Daniel Kahneman talks about this. Daniel Kahneman won the Nobel Prize for economics because he was the first person to combine economics and psychology. He calls it the insider view bias. When you're in the picture, when you're in the frame, you cannot see the picture. And so sometimes for books, it's very helpful to have somebody else give you ideas for the title of your book because you can be too close to it.
That's going to reassure a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because, and myself included, because when it's yourself, as you said, it's like it's a forest and not a lot of sense going on there. So just staying with the book word glue, you mentioned before that you won a medal or an award. So just tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I can, but let me back up. Well, mm-hmm. Let me do it in the context of this. I think that word glue won the gold medal for the Axiom Business Book Award, competing yes. against these other great big publishers for a couple of reasons. One is that I had a really good internal editor by the name of Ruth Wilson, and she's a copy advisor. So I had other copy editors, but I had a professional person. You know, and depending on the budget that your women that you serve have, they might hire you to guide them through the whole process. They might do chunks of it on their own. They might hire an organization like Two Pages, or, you know, there's so many different ways where mm. people can get the support along the journey that's right for them. But one of the pieces of advice that I got from Seth, and I now coach in some of his programs, and I'm beyond honored to be in his community, is what does the book remind you of? When somebody picks up the book, you might realize that you want your cover font to look like Simon Sinek, Start With Why, or you might want it to look like, that's a good example. You might want it to look like The Untethered Soul. So you might have, if you can find the cover that has the essence of what you want, the color, the font, the layout. You can tell your designer, I want my cover to look like this, but with that. So it gives your designer a place to go. Same with your back cover copy. So my back cover layout looks like Brené Brown's Daring Greatly. I actually looked at her layout and I went, okay, I really like the way she laid that out. Mm-hmm. My internals, the front first couple of my pages of my internals, I use Michael Bungay Stanger's book, The Coaching Habit. Because he has sold over 300,000 copies, and I thought, okay, what has he done? And I'm gonna model his best practice. Mm-hmm. And then the other internals, I used Frederick Heron's book, The Idea Book. So gather the books that speak to you, and you'll patch together the look and feel. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is one of the reasons it got the gold medal is because I spent 3 years on this book, and I shared everything I knew about naming, and there's no other book that gives every naming method. So it's generous, it's incredibly generous, mm-hmm. and it's packaged so thoughtfully, Bev. Like, I sweated over the details I sweated over the details.
Mm-hmm. So when you say package, is that when it's sent out to somebody?
Well, I do use a very particular packaging process when it's mailed out. So yes, mm-hmm. it comes in a very particular package. It's personalized and they get a note and they get a special treat, which I won't say mm-hmm. online because I don't want them to know. But no, what I mean by the packaging, the book packaging means when you open up an Austin Kleon book, Show Your Work, it has a particular look and feel. It's got a particular size, it's got a particular kind of cover, it's got illustrations and text in a particular way.
I love his books, yes.
Yeah, well, so your book might be like, you might tell your designer, I want my book to look and feel like an Austin Kleon book mm-hmm. on the inside, but I want a cover that looks like Martin Seligman's The Hope Circuit on the outside. So it's you piecing together your magic so that when people see it on the shelf or they see it online, they know that's for me.
Yes. No, that's great advice. So just if you're listening and having trouble picking up those book names, I'll put the names in the notes once I'm setting this up on the webpage. I'll find the books and put the links. I'm just reading The Coaching Habit myself, and lovely book, really simple but powerful and really interesting design as well, isn't it?
Well, Michael Bungay Stanier and I have a little joke. So mm-hmm. he's an Australian who lives in Canada. I'm a Canadian who lives in Australia.
Yes,
he's got a cleft lip, mm-hmm. and so do I. Right. And he was a Rhodes Scholar, and I live on a road.
Nice.
But he, you know, he again was very generous. I did meet with him when I was in Toronto and just ask about what his journey was like. And that was helpful. That was helpful. And there's an article which you can put that he wrote. If you look up, I sold 180,000 copies. He's got an article on Growth Lab on the strategy that he used for his marketing. Mm-hmm. And he's got a big team. So he had a number of people working on his marketing. But his book, in addition to selling now over 300,000 copies, I think quadrupled his bottom line. His business grew exponentially because of his book.
Yes. Well, I'm reading his book because I'm studying a book coaching course with Jenny Nash, and his book is one of our required reading books for the book coaching course.
So, yeah. Well, his latest one is The Advice Trap. Mm-hmm. I haven't read that one yet, but I'm sure it's equally amazing.
Fantastic. So getting back to your book, the thing that I'd really love to hear more about is how do people take what you know about naming things or businesses or brands and apply some of that to naming their own book?
I think it really helps asking a bunch of questions ahead of time. And the first one is, who is it for? When you're really clear on who your book is for, and this is part of my Q12 process, so I won't give you the whole Q12 because that will, I know your show is only a half an hour.
That's right.
But the first question to ask, who is it for? And the who is it for is not demographics. It really is, whom are you serving? And sometimes when you realize who you're serving, that can begin to generate name ideas. Mm-hmm. And what I do suggest is, keep all your names in one place, whether it's a Word doc or Evernote or your notes on your phone, because ideas beget ideas. Mm-hmm. And when I was naming the global tech company, I probably generated like 2,000 names to get to one that we could trademark. So yeah, who's it for? So that's, think of that as a segment and a story. What story, like if you look at Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why, that's the story, right? He's got a whole story of how he learned that you need to start with why. So it made sense that was the name of his book. Mm. And it might be too that there's a particular symbol or a sentiment that comes to mind when you think of your book. So Untethered Soul has a horse riding along an ocean seafront, foreshore. And that symbol of this free horse makes sense. And so then Untethered, when he knew what the feeling or the sentiment he wanted to create in his reader, then it made sense to use this free horse and words like untethered and soul. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really, you know, if for those of you who use mind mapping, I find that an incredibly helpful tool. I have a chalkboard in my kitchen. It's right behind me. I'll knock it right now. That's the chalkboard. That's where I do my name storming. And so I'll create a mind map and I'll just let these different words come together. I named a book called Smokescreen for Dr. Lorraine Greaves. She was looking at women's relationship to smoking. And that's a very complicated history. Women.
What was the name of that book, sir?
Smokescreen mm-hmm. by Dr. Lorraine Greaves. So if you get the different elements, all just have a place to collect the elements of what your brand is, you'll actually be surprised. It might be somebody else who comes in and looks at your mind map and goes, oh, well, why don't you call it soul science? Because you will have soul and you might have had science and different parts of the mind map. But somebody looking at it freshly will go, well, just put those two words together. That's the name of your book or your company.
So what about the role of this subtitle on a book cover?
I think that's really important. So the name, it's good to have a name that breaks what I call the 2 second test, because we're now living in the attention economy. And if your name doesn't break through, you're going to blend in. And so that means be as brave as you can. Look at the cover, that orange cover, The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? That was a really bold cover in terms of layout and font and expression.
Yes.
So there's another book that came out almost at the same time that had a slightly similar title, but was not graphically portrayed as strong, and they didn't have as good sales. So the name gets you attention. The tagline is your result. Something changes when you encounter a good brand. The person you are at the beginning is kind of different than the person you are at the end.
Yes.
So if you're making these women successful authors, they're becoming something they weren't before. They're becoming an author-ity as a result of your kind work. So the tagline, there's a really good exercise they can use called the pre and post exercise, and this is in my book too. You write down pre, what's the state of your readers before they encounter your material? And you make a list, so they might lack confidence, so they might be fearful. And then what you do is you go to the post column and you take that F of fearful and you go, what's another F word that's the opposite of fearful? Well, focused. So that pre and post where you force yourself to use alliteration, it gets your brain thinking about outcomes, because the pre and post is essentially from this state to that state. That exercise can often awaken the essence of your promise, which you can then turn into your tagline or strapline.
How would you summarize the impact of a book title? What should it do?
A book title in the attention economy has to grab people's attention, and it has to get noticed above the noise. What we know about the brain is we are now filtering out a ridiculous amount of information all the time. There's 1,100,000 tweets done an hour. Coca-Cola has a $2 billion marketing budget. I can't even imagine what the publishing budget is for Penguin. So you are competing against a lot of noise, and your title has to grab the reader that belongs in your niche right away. So it has to break out, not blend in.
Mm. And it still has to, yeah, you still have to, I think, not comply with rules, it's not what I'm trying to say, but it still has to be classy without resorting to something that's too trickery. The book you mentioned before, which has got the F word in the title, I mean, it worked once, I think, but then now and then you see another book who's trying to do the same thing, and I think, well, that doesn't actually work, because it's, to me, it's just where you're just trying to replicate somebody else's big or good idea.
Well, and this is where it gets really tricky from a marketing point of view. That's called semiotics, when you echo something else. So when somebody, like a Stephen King book cover looks like a Stephen King book cover,
yes.
Right? A Margaret Atwood book cover, even though she's got many different, for example, covers of Handmaid's Tale, it's going to have a certain feel that cover is going to get across. So You, I will go back to that foundational exercise, and that is know who your book is for and figure out, oh, I want my book to have a cover like this because my people, let's say they're into yoga, read books. The best-selling yoga books are these. Or let's say they like finance. Well, the best-selling finance books are these. What kind of covers are there already that I can echo? So the people who already buy books like that will realize this book is for me too. Mm-hmm. So it's a really fine line. You don't want to use somebody's exact cover, and you don't want to use their exact tactic, but you want to echo enough of it that your audience knows that one's for me because it feels right.
Yes. Yes. Definitely. So that's a really, I guess that's a good caution about trying something totally left of center, but sometimes that works. It's a funny world, isn't it?
Well, you know, look at Seth Godin. When he created the book Purple Cow, he distributed it inside a milk container. And mm-hmm. he actually had to find a manufacturer who was willing to produce a book in that milk container. And it was, I think he advertised it in Fast Company. Forgive me, you might have to look at the actual mm-hmm. story of sure. that. But it had a particular shape. It was had a purple cow on it, had purple writing, and these marketing people would have this box with purple cow on their desk and people would go, what's that? So, you know, if you look at the, when those guys did the book for Thank You Water, the Thank You Company, mm-hmm. you know, they had a very particular look for their book. Their book was read, not right to left. It was like, or east to west, whatever. It was, you know, you open it up and you read it north to south.
Right.
Right, yes. So the fundamental orientation of the book. So you can play with your book to do things that will get other people talking. That's what you want to do. Mm-hmm. You want to be remarkable, which really means being worthy of remark, get people talking. And I'm grateful for Seth for teaching all of us that primary marketing lesson. Mm-hmm.
Great. I'm just making a note of that. Be remarkable. In other words, get people talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you... Yeah, we're depending on when this airs, we are in the midst of the Corona-19 virus,
yes.
COVID-19, and most of us, Bev and I, are talking from our homes because we're sheltering in place, which is a way to flatten the curve so that the virus doesn't spread and we all protect each other. Four people who stay at home save a life. So that's what's going on. In terms of marketing, you want to be viral. You want to create something where Bev finds out about my book. She's going to tell two people. Those two people will tell four people. Those four people will tell eight people. And, you know, you want an exponential curve, not in a virus, which is what we have right now, unless people keep staying at home. You want an exponential curve with your book. And that, well, let me just pause there for a second. It depends what you want the book to do. So for me, yes. I don't care about book sales. I care about the credibility that that comes from a gold medal book from a naming expert. That gives me credibility. That means I can talk to CEOs in a different way. So I don't care how many books I sell. What I care about is to be with the clients I love to serve. But still, when the CEO saw the book, he goes, oh, I think I saw that in the airport bookstore. If my book has never been in the airport bookstore, but when he picked it up, it felt like something he recognized.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. So I think that's a really good note just to bring it all together. But yeah, I just think that's a very profound statement in your case. I mean, your book is an integral part of your business, but it's not about book sales. It's about the credibility that comes from your book and the doors that open because of that. So
yes, absolutely.
That's definitely the goal of the people that I work with in my publishing business as well. It's really, and that's what I care about too. It's really, it's what the book can do for their business, but also the part that excites me is what a book does for my client, just the enormous personal growth and journey they go on. It's pretty awesome.
Well, and I will say, because somebody listening to this is perhaps looking at the blank page and they're trying to figure out, okay, what do I know and how do I share it? And the journey of getting your book finished is very confronting. There's going to be moments where you feel like, what on earth do I have to say? Or, oh my gosh, I know what I can say. And then who are people going to think I am? So there's this whole mental ping pong. But I actually think of it as this. And it wasn't until I try and live a green life. I was rolling my books to the Williamstown Literary Festival on a little cart rolly because I try and live, you know, a carbon neutral life to the best of my ability. And I just had this moment of peace. And it was this beautiful moment of peace because I was going to my own book launch. And every step along the way had been hard and confronting and sweating the details. And there have been moments of writing bliss, but it had been hard. But then there was just this moment of peace where I was like, oh, right. And what I learned was the person who's willing to tame the dragon gets the gold.
Nice. Perfect place to pause. So thank you so much for joining me to have this chat. And so where can people find your book?
Wordglue.co. So triple W, as they all know, wordglue.co.
So if people have been struggling to hear what we're saying when we say word glue, I'll just spell it out. wordglue.co.
Perfect.
And if you are about to write a book or writing a book, have a look how Louise has set up the website for her book, how it's integrated into everything she does. Great example for you to learn from and model. And also your book, Word Glue, will be on my bookshelf within a week or two for sure, because I'm going to really love being able to learn from you and then maybe share some of that with my clients as I help them with their books.
Well, and I wrote this book for people just like you and your community so that they could find the name that would get them noticed above the noise. So, Bev, it's been so great talking to you. Thanks for all you do. As a book midwife, you are a very, very special change agent. So thank you for this time, and thank you so much for the work that you do.
Thank you again. So I'm Bev Ryan, and you can find me at smartwomenpublish.com.